This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. While our general election has consumed our attention for more than a year, it's not just as non-right-wing Americans are confounded by the rise of Donald Trump, it's much of the rest of the world too. So next, as part of our election special coverage, we go live to South Africa to speak with one person who's been keeping close tabs on the race. Sameer Dosani is an independent activist and freelance journalist. He now joins me. Welcome to the program, Sameer.
Always good to be here, Sonali.
So you woke up, I think, expecting to see Clinton beating Trump by a landslide. What are you feeling looking at the news in South Africa today?
I mean, in some ways, this isn't unexpected. You know, I think the story of this election, really, if we go back to the early days with sort of Bernie and Trump getting unexpected support, the story of this election and of the last of 2016 really has been about the failure of the political center. And the problem with this, with the Democratic candidate, with Hillary Clinton, is that she is so much associated with the political center that it's very hard for her to run as someone who's running against that. So I think, you know, if the Republicans had run someone else, other than, you know, the most unfavorable person in America, a politician in America, then I think they would have blown her out. Conversely, of course, if the Democrats had run someone else, they would have blown him out. So it's a little bit, I mean, it's not that unsurprising. For me, the story of this election is really, and the story of the last few months, globally, politically, is the failure of the political center.
So, Sameer, what is the world impression? I know that's, you can't sort of sum up international response in a short sentence or two, but from where you sit, looking from the outside in, I remember traveling, visiting my family nearly a year ago, and friends approaching me, just kind of shocked that somebody like Trump could gain any traction at all. And that was among one of the first things that came out of their mouths after they said hello to me. How are people, say, in South Africa and in other parts of the world seeing, how do they view Trump?
Yeah, they see him as kind of a clown, don't they? I mean, I'm here, I'm about to go to a conference where we have people coming from Botswana, from Mozambique, from a number of countries in the region. And all they wanted to talk to me about yesterday was the U.S. election and this guy Trump and how crazy he is, et cetera. So, I mean, I think that it's, you know, he's a bit of a caricature of the bad American, the sort of bad tourist who you know, yells at people, you know, that they don't speak English and this kind of stuff. So in some ways, it's just not going to improve the image of the U.S. abroad, clearly. But I will say that I used to live, as you may know, Sonali, I've lived in many countries over the last few years, including the Philippines and India. And when I talk to people from those two countries, I think they kind of get it. Because I think what's happened in those two countries, and now the U.S. may be about to join the bandwagon, is a shift towards the far right. Again, because the political center failed, and because the left could never get its act together, could never unite behind a single candidate or behind a single party. So the result is we have Narendra Modi, who's a sort of pseudo-fascist in India. He just announced he was going to cancel a bunch of, he's just going to like cancel the 500 rupee note and the 1,000 rupee note. I don't know if you follow that story. It's a very strange thing to do.
So and of course, Trump and Modi are pals, not surprisingly.
They are indeed. They are indeed. There was a whole Hindus for Trump you know, I thought it was a joke at first, but it actually existed. It was a very, very strange set of like Bollywood icons in favor of Donald Trump. It was very odd. And then in the Philippines, we have Duterte, who in the name of a war on drugs is really just waging a war on poor people and killing thousands in extrajudicial assassinations that are kind of condoned by the center.
Brexit? Do you see a comparison with the British vote to exit the EU, which also shocked a lot of people?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the Brexit vote was, I think people didn't really know what they were voting for. It was all very unclear. And the level of public relations in Britain is just so insane that, you know, both sides were lying to a huge extent. Whereas here, I think voters kind of know Clinton. I mean, she's been in a public limelight for 30 years, and people know what she represents, and this is a vote against her, I guess you have to say, because no one is really voting for anyone. The kind of negatives, the kind of unfavorables both of these candidates have, it's really you're running against your enemy. You're not running for your candidate. And we've seen that even with the Hillary camp, where I was pushing some people to sort of articulate a positive message. And all they, you know, many times what they were just saying is, you know, look what Trump will bring. And I told them that that was not necessarily the most wise way to campaign.
Right. So basically, Clinton's strongest Trump card, if you will, was that she is not Trump. Well, right now, the count, as we do this live election program, the count of Electoral College votes is 216 for Trump and 188 for Clinton. He is inching ever closer to that magic 270 number, at which point he will be considered the winner of this election. Really sort of hard to believe this is all happening. Now, Samir, one of the issues that I think really needs to be raised is the role is the future of the Republican Party going forward. I mean, George W. Bush did not vote for anybody this election. His spokesperson said that while he didn't vote for Clinton, as father apparently did, he didn't vote for Trump either. I mean, that's a pretty strong statement. Trump is facing a lot of censure from his own party. Going forward, do you think the Republicans are going to coalesce around a possible President Trump's realizing that he had it right all along, or we're going to see a complete reconfiguration of the Conservative Party in the U.S.?
You know, that's a really good question. What happens to the Republicans now that they've won with a candidate that they didn't back?
We're still speculating that he won, but it's looking very possible.
Certainly, yes. No, sorry, I don't mean to. I'm just anticipating the worst case scenario at this point. If that were to happen, my sense is that my guess really is that it would be Trump in the driver's seat. And he would have to tell people, you know, get on board, get with the program. This is what we're doing. And he, on certain things, he would get some degree of support. I'm not so sure on things like what he wants to do around trade, pulling out of the TPP and so on. That's such a key part of sort of the corporate wing of the party's agenda. There may be a fight there. I don't know. So there are certain things I think he could. I think there are other things that will probably, policy-wise, will probably go forward in a very quick way. I think that he'll try and restart negotiations on the Keystone XL pipeline, for example. So I think it's a bit of both. I think it'll be a bit of coming together and a bit of a sort of kumbaya moment around everyone sort of getting with a certain degree of the program. But I do think he'll still have to negotiate with his own party on certain key measures. The other question is, will he actually, you know, Trump has a notoriously short attention span. So will he actually like do anything? Will he actually be the one pulling the levers of power, so to speak? Or will it be Mike Pence who's doing that, as he has indicated in some speeches? So if that's the case, Pence is much closer to a sort of typical Republican line. So it's the many different options here, in part because Trump has said so many contradictory things over the course of the past few months.
Now, Samir, certainly under a Trump presidency, we'd have a major setback in terms of progressive values and, you know, social issues in particular, racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia. What about the climate and the environment? We face an existential threat, and with the climate warming, and with President Obama having approved the Paris Accord and the U.S. coming on board with a major treaty to attempt to curb global warming, the planet does not have even 4 years of going down the same path that we've been going down really left, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to tell you the truth, Sonali, that's what gives me a bit of heart if Trump is to win this. Because frankly, a Clinton administration wouldn't have been that different on this issue. It would have been they would have accepted climate change, but you would have seen the same kind of pragmatic, quote unquote, approach that we saw from Obama. So I kind of like the fact that, you know, the Republicans will be in charge, may be in charge. Sorry, I don't mean to presume. It seems likely at this point that the Republicans may be in charge of both houses, all three houses, all three branches of government. And if that's the case, then it really becomes how do we, as activists, how do we, as people who are concerned about future generations, how do we, as humans, do the moral thing, which at this point is to to just raise the stakes and to do more direct action, the kind of stuff that we're seeing in North Dakota over the past several weeks. How do we literally, stop the bulldozers? How do we literally close the roads? And so it's going to be it's in some ways it's going to be a dividing moment, but in other ways I think it could really be a coming together for the climate movement. And I think we need to, at the same time as we're doing that, we need to be proposing and pushing and saying, look, this is not an anti-worker, this is not an anti-job campaign. In fact, we have lots of need for infrastructure upgrades, green jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there are many think tanks that we could work, we as activists could work with, to sort of say, no, we are on the same side as workers. This is not workers versus the planet discussion. This is all of us versus human extinction discussion.
Now, Samir, I assume that you, like many of us, have been obsessively checking the polls. And up until election night, it seemed as though Clinton was looking at a comfortable win. How could the polls have been this wrong? Is there an analysis to be made here that the way in which we measure the voting public has something to do with voter disaffection, the fact that so many voters have over the years have checked out of the process, so they're simply not polled. What can we read about how wrong these polls could be?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and I'm sure there'll be lots of hand-wringing in the coming days. I mean, I think the short story is that polls getting it wrong is kind of the new normal now. If we look at Brexit, if we look at the 2014 election cycle, the midterm election cycle, clearly something is wrong with the methodology in some very fundamental ways, and I think we need to examine that. I think in this case also, there's people saying that maybe people were too shy to say they were going to vote for Trump. I suppose that's possible. So I think there's many different scenarios. I mean, like I say, at the end of the day, Hillary's favorables never got up, never more than 20, 30% of the population, maybe 34% of the population had a favorable opinion of Hillary Clinton. So when you have a candidate who's that unpopular, you do run the risk of that coming home to roost on election day. Of course, the same can be said for Donald Trump. His favorables were even fewer. So it could have gone the other way, I suppose, is the upside, or it can still go the other way because we're still looking at some key races. But if it does go Trump's way, I think we have a lot to learn about the role of negatives in this kind of an election.
Yes, and you mentioned earlier that it could be the GOP controls all three branches of government. As of now, it looks like the GOP is on track to maintain Senate control just by a small margin. It was already called earlier that the House remains in GOP hands. That's not a surprise. And if the executive goes to the GOP, that is going to be a very interesting scenario that we haven't seen in a long time in this country. Samir, I'm sure we'll touch base with you again in the near future. Thank you, as always, for the work you do and for joining us today.
Thanks, Sonali.
Samir Dosani is an independent activist and freelance journalist, and he is joining us live from South Africa. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/ruwithsonali. We'll be back in just a moment.